right, we're on the air. Finally, we are trending now with Josh Arnold and producer and engineer Bill Proposky. I'm Rick Moore. And because we're behind schedule a little bit here, we're going to go right to the interviews. Josh, who do you have this morning?
First guest is Estelle Rand, who is a candidate for re-election to the city council in Beverly. Estelle, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Well, we usually start out and give us your little 2 or 3, 4 minute bio, and then we'll get into some questions.
All right, sounds good. Well, I've been, I'll start with Beverly. I've been living in Beverly since 2003. I grew up in New Hampshire, and what attracted me to Beverly was the access to the train to Boston and the walkability of the downtown and the beach and, you know, the small businesses that are there. I have two kids. Miles, who's 12, and Magnolia is 10, and my husband Jonathan and I, we all live up on Goat Hill in Beverly, and we've been homeowners on Goat Hill for 2 years now. Fantastic. Probably what kind of pushed me towards leadership, community leadership in Beverly was my founding of the Beverly Farmers Market, as it is today. So this, we're going into our 9th season with the Beverly Farmers Market, so I'm continuing to lead that. And that just kind of got me into getting involved with City Hall and different city committees and various departments, and that kind of led the way for me to run for city council.
Great. Now, you're just wrapping up your first term, correct?
Actually, it's my second term.
Second term, all right.
And so fast.
Yeah, what would you say were the more significant issues that the city council faced during the past term, and maybe you want to comment on a couple of them?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the things that I'm really proud of that the city council addressed with the mayor's office and planning department is are some changes to our affordable housing. So we in Beverly have an inclusionary zoning ordinance, and we recently approved some amendments to that inclusionary zoning ordinance, which basically makes affordable housing a little more accessible to a bigger range of incomes. There are a lot of different ways to think about affordable housing, but one of the tools that Beverly has is that when somebody builds new apartments, the city requires that a certain percentage of those apartments be offered at an affordable rental rate. So, one of the things that the amendments addressed is that the affordable rate is pretty close to the income level that qualifies for this affordable rate. In the past has actually been pretty high. It's been 80% of the area median income, which is pretty high here in Essex County. So we've made some amendments so that the affordable housing can be offered to people who are making 60% of the area median income as well. Just to put that into perspective, that basically creates access to these affordable units for people who are making, like, you know, $40,000, $50,000 a year. So it's basically what's called workforce housing.
Good.
So, yeah, I was proud to be part of that and just kind of, you know, through the council push for that change. And I think we'll see more. I think Beverly will continue to do things that add to our ability to retain the affordable housing that we have now. And I'm mostly speaking about the affordable housing that is not state-funded, talking about kind of like lower-cost rentals and, you know, smaller landlords who own buildings now. How do we keep that? How do we keep those in place without losing them to larger and market rate developments.
Great. Now, the city council relationship with mayors in most elected most cities where there's an elected mayor tends to be by charter a certain type of checks and balances. And that creates some institutional friction, I suppose. Describe that climate, if you will, for Beverly, and how does that work?
Sure, yeah. Well, so in Beverly, our charter has a creates a strong mayoral government. So the city council still acts as a balance to that, to the administration, but the mayor has a stronger position, right? I would say it's not exactly even, but that's you know, for I can just kind of speak for me personally, my own experience on the council. I think there is a natural tension that exists when you're the balance to some other arm, right? But in my experience in Beverly, we have a functional working relationship and can have work together to get things done. So, you know, I think that as long as I think, you know, the problems occur when people start taking that natural tension personally, you know. But as an elected official, I fully recognize that it's not my job to take things personally. It's my job to be objective and professional, and to have the interest of the people I represent in my actions at all times. So
now, there's been a lot of development, infrastructure improvements in Beverly over the past couple of years. What impact has that had on you as a ward councilor, and how do you go about letting your constituency know what the impact issues are of those projects in terms of their day-to-day life?
Yeah, so actually a lot of the major action has been in Ward 2, so, and that's the ward that I represent, and that's the downtown area. So you may know that we're in the process of redoing Route 1A, which is Rantoul Street in downtown.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much, you know, that project is on target, but it's been very disruptive for residents and businesses for about a year and a half now. So, and then actually you can go to a lot of other areas of the city and you'll see a lot of repaving, a lot of prep work for paving. So one of the things that I do is to send out a newsletter, and I share the updates for the Route 1A project in my newsletter, and do my best just to communicate when there will be big changes and respond to constituents' questions, like when are the trees coming in, things like that. But overall, I think, you know, we rely a lot on constituents to be patient, because the fact is that a two-year project is just going to be disruptive. So I would like to explore a little bit more. Some neighboring communities like Salem seem to have really worked hard at getting a separate web page that really announces all of the construction that's happening within the city at once. I think that's a great idea, because then you can, as a city councilor, you can always point to that and say, you know, I can look at it for my information, or I can share it with constituents. So, because I think the nature of some of these projects are, it's not that they're not planned, but some of them, like paving in the summertime.
Sure.
You know, I just spoke with our commissioner last night and said, hey, I wasn't expecting that part of Thames Street to be, you know, ripped up.
Well, you never know when you tear something up, when you try to renovate something, what you're going to find beneath
exactly.
The surface. So.
Yeah. So there's a lot of it that is not easy to plan ahead for, which is why I think that having kind of an updatable feed for the construction and road closures and changes that are going on is a great idea. But, so I just try and keep the information that I try and keep that flowing to constituents through social media and my newsletter and sharing the Route 1A newsletter.
Which brings me to probably our final question that we'll have time for today, and that is just what has been the impact of social media, both in terms of campaigning as a candidate, but also communicating with one's constituency about what's transpiring or what is about to transpire and so forth.
Yeah, I think, for me, social media is helpful because it's one more way for people to get in touch with me. A lot of people, you still have to do the other forms of communication and media, like newspaper, newsletters, knocking on someone's door, talking to them. But social media is great because you can reach a lot of people at once. You can share information quickly. So it's not always reliable in the sense that people are going to see the information in a timely fashion, but it still helps to get information out there through social media. I think one of the things that I try and stay away from on social media is negativity. So, sometimes the community pages can be a useful resource for, as a city councilor, I can look and see what people are kind of taking issue with, but overall, I tend not to get involved with sort of that back and forth.
Sure, sure.
Of social media.
Be like political quicksand, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I try to just speak with people personally, or at least just as an individual when they're having an issue.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best in your upcoming election. And maybe we'll have you back later in the year as the campaign trail heats up a little bit.
Yeah, I would love that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stel. Take care. Have a good day.
You too. Yep.
Meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is also a city councilor in Beverly, and John Frates. Welcome to the program.
Well, thanks so much, Josh.
We usually start out, tell us a little bit about yourself, a 2-3-4 minute bio, and then we'll get into some questions.
Sure. Lifelong resident of Beverly, three wonderful children, grandchildren as well, three of them. I was involved in politics early in my career, in my mid to late 20s, on the planning board in Beverly. Saw a lot of growth in the Centerville area where I now live, and also being selected to the Board of Aldermen. And then let's fast forward about 24, 25 years, and I ran for councilor now as the charter changed in the city of Beverly because my career was interrupted in financial services by a devastating disease called ALS, which my son Pete, who most of you will know as the inspiration behind the Ice Bucket Challenge, started to falter, and he needed more at-home care. So in going through the Rolodex of my mind, I said, what can I do to help? This community has been so amazing to us. in supporting us, and if I can give back in any way by representing these wonderful people here in Ward 6, it is my honor and pleasure to serve.
Great. Well, and you've been on the City Council how long?
This will be my third term coming up, if I'm running unopposed. We'll see. But before that, I did a stint of about 2 years back in the late 80s.
Okay. Great. So what are the, you know, there's sometimes the inherent, I don't want to say friction or tension, but there's a set of checks and balances that exist between a city council and a popularly elected mayor. How does that play out in Beverly, and how do you describe the working relationship the city council has with the mayor, or the current mayor, or even the past mayors that that you've worked under?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think I'm in a unique position, having served as a member of the Board of Aldermen when we had a strong legislative body like the board and a weak mayor system, and now we have the opposite after the charter changed in the mid to late 80s. This setup and arrangement where the mayor has the strong hand, the power, he does a lot of the legislation, and we are his backstop, his check and balance, in my opinion, works so much better, because he's a professional. This is what he or she does for a living, and with surrounded by the people that he chooses to select as his department heads, accountable to the people. But the difference to me is you can have part-time people the way it was back in the old days, running the city, being the legislative power, and also trying to run and manage the city finances. So this is a much better situation. Are there some tweaks? Sure, there's a few tweaks that could be done, but in my opinion, this is a far better setup, and I would bet that I have the longest gap between elected positions in the in state history. Just a little trivia.
Yeah. Listen, you know, do you ever find that a mayor, and I'm not suggesting this mayor or even that this happens in Beverly, but do you ever find an example where a mayor may not get along with the whoever the ward councilor is and just says to the DPW, the police, the fire chief, look, whatever this guy puts in order, just bury it?
Yeah, you know, in the old days, I would agree with you, because I think sometimes, even though we all love our city, we all want to serve, but sometimes I think you put self before city. And by saying that, I mean, you know, people who were the local real estate agent, the local attorney, whatever they were promoting for their business, I felt way back that people would look to see how it benefited them, and then they would serve their constituents.
Yeah.
Today, I don't see, of course, this friction. Of course, there's going to be political issues, but it's politics. It's just like a sporting game and the event. And once the game is over, we're still here for the same reason, which is our love for our city and the reason we want this city to excel and exceed. But to say that a mayor would ever do something like that, even with all sorts of contentiousness, I have never experienced that.
Okay, great. Tip O'Neill, in his book, The Man of the House, would say, you know, we could be rivals, you know, when we're on the floor, but when we walk out, we're still colleagues and friends. And sometimes that doesn't carry over. It certainly doesn't seem like that's the case in Washington today, but you'd like to know that you know, the closer you get to home, that still works. Beverly's had its fair amount of infrastructure improvements over the last few years, and sometimes that has a direct impact on the ward councilor, because the ward councilor, at least in Gloucester, the ward councilor is sort of the person who handles all the constituency type stuff. So, you know, when the garbage or the trash isn't picked up, or the water pressure isn't good, or the plow went down the street and left 8 feet on either side, you're the person who ends up dealing with that. I assume that's the same way in Beverly.
You couldn't have said it any better. And first of all, getting back to Tip O'Neill, he said all politics is local. So when we talk about national politics, you know, that's so far removed sometimes from us.
Yeah.
And what's great about municipal government is that we can actually touch and interact with our fellow councillors and constituents, which I love, just being the conduit between services that you described and the population, because they may not know how to navigate as well as we do. And that's all we're trying to do is serve. But, yeah, the difference between an at-large position, which I was in before, and the ward councillor is exactly what you said. And it's the same today as it was then. Roads and sidewalks, you know, educating our children. Those are always the most important.
Nuts and bolts stuff.
But I do get a fair amount of calls about neighbor versus neighbor, which I'm a little surprised at. In the old days, I used to get calls, for instance, about the issue, you know, Prop 2.5 or... affordable housing, and they wanted to weigh in on their opinion. Today, I find, you know, somebody's running their chainsaw, and my child can't sleep, or they're disturbing my party, that sort of thing. It's a little different.
Yeah, yeah. In terms of the infrastructure improvements, how much of an impact has that had on you as a ward councilor in terms of mediating scheduling changes and disruptions of day-to-day services, or even the ability to get up and down the road to get home or to leave work, or so forth? What's that been like for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm a local guy. Now that my son is so sick, I pretty much stay home and care for him. So when in and driving around the city, it is very challenging and difficult, and especially in my ward where we just did a big project in Beverly Farms. It was disruptive because those homes, those streets are so narrow. And one day when it was, I remember going down there and working with the crew, or standing by and watching the crew and just seeing the amazing challenges that went on. The guys on detail, the guys who are coming in with the four-wheelers and they might not have been following the rules, and people who were just, you know, upset that their routine was thrown off a little bit and couldn't get to work on time. So those are the challenges. But, again, look at the benefit. We have some beautiful pavement now, and it's going to be good for another 25, 30 years.
That's great. They, you know, Beverly reminds me, one of the things I do is I'm an advocate for children with special needs, and I had a client, the case in Beverly, and you know, had to get to a particular school, and I, you know, I couldn't get there because, you know, the only way I could get there was to drive down a one-way street the wrong way. And lo and behold, it's only one way after a certain time in the day. But I didn't know that. And
yeah,
that was just the first time I ever encountered a one-way street during certain hours. But anyway, yeah, lots of things. What about social media? Is social media impact elections? But I have to suspect it has a role in, you know, talking to your constituency or people weighing in on issues. Tell us a little bit about that, if you can.
Yeah, social media is, if you know anything about our cause, which is the Ice Bucket Challenge,
yeah,
and raising awareness for ALS.
I'm friendly with Dawn Kelly from Rotary and some of the
okay.
other people that that you're friendly with, so I'm well aware.
Okay, so therefore, social media, to me, is a godsend. It's what has taken a compelling story and put it in front of a national and worldwide audience. So I'm a huge proponent of social media. Am I doing the best at it that some of the other of my associates are doing? No, I wouldn't say that because, for instance, Matt St. Hilaire has a great website where he does a lot of polling. Some of the other folks, like David Lang, post up the meeting notices that really educate, and I just either A, don't have the skill set, or sometimes I don't have the time. So I'm envious of those guys who can use it a little bit better than I have right now, but we are a huge proponent of social media.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you and your family the very best. I know it's a lot on your plate, and appreciate the time you've given us and certainly your commitment to public service in the community of Beverly.
Well, thank you so much, Josh, for having us, and best of luck to you. And hello to my public press. He's a cop down there in Gloucester for the last 25 years.
Okay, I will. Take care.
All right, see ya. Bye.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
NewSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Ed Cameron, who is a city councilor at large in the city of Newburyport. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. How are you?
Well, thank you. We got off to a little bit of a late start because I misplaced something on the way here and had to backpedal to get your number and someone else's. But anyway, we're good. We usually start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, a 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we could get some questions about what's going on in Newburyport.
Sure. So I am a Newburyport City Councilor. I'm currently in my fifth term. We have 2-year terms. I'm an at-large councilor, although I served for a couple of terms as a ward councilor, really Newburyport Council. I think we've done a lot of great things over the 10 years that I've been on, all in partnership with, I've served under 2 mayors, Mayor John Moak and current Mayor Donna Holliday. My day job, I have been working with homeless people for 30 years. I started back in 1987 at the Pine Street Inn. I was living in Boston at the time, and I've continued that sort of work right now. I am the CEO at Housing Families in Malden. We serve homeless families both with shelter services and permanent housing, but also legal services, and we have a therapeutic after-school program for homeless kids. So to me, it kind of ties into my community work as a city councilor, just really trying to help people in whatever way I can. And really pleased to be on your show.
Great. Now, Newburyport is a city. You have a popularly elected mayor.
Yes.
Charters tend to provide a certain level of check and balance between a mayor, the executive branch, and the legislative branch.
Yep.
What is that like in terms of tension or friction, or how would you describe the working relationship the council has with the mayor?
Yeah, I think there's a good relationship, and I think it's a healthy and sometimes combative and you know, with the normal tensions that you expect in government. But yes, we are a city. We, I believe, are the second smallest city in Massachusetts. We have a population of 17,000, so we are definitely on the small side for an elected mayor. I think a lot of communities our size, you know, tend to go with a manager or even, you know, more of a town representative, town government kind of arrangement. So for a small place, I think it's a little unusual to have the executive power reside in the mayor. In 2011, we changed our charter, which hadn't really been changed since 1919, and now we have a 4-year mayoral term. The thought was to give the mayor, you know, more running room, whoever's in that position, to get things done and not have to run every 2 years. But our council is 11 members. 6 are ward councilors who deal more with the day-to-day, you know, neighborhood disputes, sidewalks, street conditions, that sort of thing. And then we have 5 at-large councilors who, you know, in theory have a broader perspective, but we also get drawn into those sort of things. So, you know, there's a fair amount of the usual kind of checks and balances. The mayor proposes the budget. Our council can only cut. We can't add, although we often advocate for the issues that we're concerned about, which may be schools or streets and sidewalks or other particular needs that are there. But I think, you know, the amount of tension, you know, it depends on the perspective of the people involved and certainly the issue, but I think there's, you know, a healthy amount of back and forth. It's all not kumbaya, and depending on the issue, we've got a couple of development-related issues right now. We've been trying to change our waterfront, which has been dominated by parking for the last 40 years, and many of us for a long time have been trying to have more of a park atmosphere there, and that's something that hopefully we're coming to a resolution on. But I think it works pretty well. I mean, you know, checks and balances are part of the American system. I've recently been reading a biography about Alexander Hamilton, and our politics today aren't nearly as contentious as they were back in the 1790s and 1800s. So
that misses the mark a lot.
It's part of democracy, so I think it works pretty well in Newburyport.
That's great. You know, you mentioned about the charter. Did I understand you to say you can only cut departments, you cannot add to the appropriation?
Right. We can cut line items, you know, lower the amounts or cut a line item altogether. And I believe it's you know, part of our charter that it makes it so. So, for instance, we may cut, you know, say we cut $50,000 from a variety of line items. We may then recommend to the mayor, and it's up to her or him, to add that amount in somewhere else in the budget. And so there's often a negotiation that goes on,
sure,
you know, every May and June when we're looking to finalize our fiscal year budget. But yeah, we're not able to add items. So it's, you know, it's different, obviously, at the federal and state level where the legislature, you know, creates the budget,
yeah,
and starts the appropriations process, and then a president or a governor can veto. You know, obviously at the state level, there's a line item veto. At the federal level, it's not quite that precise. But I'd say we don't have as much power in terms of the budget process as a state legislature or federal Congress would have, but we've got a lot of, you know, we're the ones who actually have to sign off on it, so we that's where we get a lot of our clout.
You mentioned that you were a ward counselor for a couple of terms and then moved to at large. How do you, I know in Gloucester, for example, the ward counselors are the, and it doesn't say this in the charter, but it evolved this way, that, you know, they're the ones that handle my street didn't get plowed well enough, or the trash didn't get picked up, or the water pressure is poor, or any of those kinds of issues. How do you, differentiate for us what, you know, when you get a call from somebody that says the water pressure is poor on Fly-By-Night Street, Smith Street, any given street, do you pass it over to the ward counselor, or do you pick up the phone and call the DPW guy, or, you know?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, probably each at-large counselor handles it a little differently. I may get involved, but I would usually CC the ward counselor, you know, if I heard about a resident parking issue. Those typically would be dealt with by the ward counselor. You know, I might email him, and actually all of our 11 counselors right now are men, so when I use the word him, I'm being literal. Okay. You know, I would reach out to that person, because there may be a history there that I'm not aware of, and often in sort of local affairs, you know, a situation looks a certain way, but there's usually a long history there that I might not be aware of. So I'm careful to check in and not disrupt any sort of progress that's being made. But yeah, often, you know, I'll reach out directly to a department head, you know, CC the mayor, just to let her know, you know, about an issue. I'm just thinking of a couple of local ones now. I noticed a recently reconstructed sidewalk is looking like it's falling apart to me already after a couple of years. So, you know, that's something I would involve the ward counselor in, but also, you know, raise that with the mayor. And, you know, we had a contractor that did this 3 years ago, and this sidewalk's supposed to last for at least 20 years. You know, it could somebody from DPS look into it and that sort of thing. So, you know, I think we're best when we work collaboratively. Doesn't mean all 11 counselors have to be involved in a certain, you know, like on a street corner kind of issue, because everybody's busy. And again, you know, we're not like Boston City Hall, where counselors are full time. You know, this is a part time job where we might have a couple of meetings a week, and we'll field calls and emails during the week. But there's a couple of folks who are retired, or they're self-employed, and they've got a little more time, but a lot of us have, you know, full-time busy day jobs, so it is a bit of a struggle to kind of find the time. But, and you want to do it in an effective way where we're not chasing each other's tails, but that there's some sort of coordination and collaboration in there. So that's how I try to handle it.
Great. Now, you're a social media. Social media has an impact on elections. It has an impact on, you know, dealing with your constituency. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, in Newburyport, and, you know, I'm sure this is probably pretty common in a lot of communities now. I think the rise of Facebook and Twitter, you know, kind of puts us all on our toes a little bit more, which is a good thing. At the same time, it can be quite easy to spread, you know, stories that aren't 100% factual or are not 100% complete. But I think it's an important thing to monitor. I take a positive approach to it. There's a particular site in Newburyport called Newburyport Commons, and, you know, might have a couple thousand people who are in that group. And, you know, it's a good way to learn about, you know, downtown issues, or if they're, you know, we hear about speeding and potholes and dogs leaving their waste and, you know, certain things that are going on in town. And, you know, sometimes there's a bit of chasing the tail and figuring out what the real story is there. But to me, it's a great, you know, it's a great way to become aware of issues rather than waiting for people to contact you through phone or email. So I like it. I think it is helpful. It's a good way to disseminate information as well. You know, but a lot of it can be a little bit of a mob mentality, and people getting really riled up about things that might not be as important as a couple of people say. I also think there's a bit of an echo chamber on Facebook. You can have, you know, five people banging away on the same issue repeatedly, and it seems like it's, you know, thousands of people, but it's really, you know, five people who are, you know, are doing a good job advocating on a particular issue that is of concern with them. And so I think that all needs to be factored in as well. But it, you know, it's definitely, it's here to stay. It's part of the way that we communicate these days. And I think, any elected official who does not, pay attention to that, is gonna not be as effective as they want to be.
We got the time for maybe a minute or two left, and
sure.
To what extent does most elections at the municipal level are not partisan, are nonpartisan, but you find that it creeps in one way or another in the electoral process. I know when I look at campaign finance returns across multiple cities, you know, you'll find that the Democratic Party gave money to, you know, it might be people in Salem, but they gave money to the Democratic Party in Marlboro. Mm-hmm. And the PBD people gave money to the Republican people in such and such. What is the impact, if any, that you see of that in Newburyport?
Yeah, I mean, so we're nonpartisan, and I think for the most part, there's been a general respect of, you know, either the local Republican city committee or the local Democratic city committee, you know, formally staying out of it. You know, I know I'm a Democrat, and I've been a part of our city committee for years and chaired it for a few years. You know, I was always very careful to keep, you know, to keep Democratic politics out of local politics, because I do think it muddies the water. There's a current city council colleague of mine who was the chair of the local Republicans at one point. You know, occasionally there's a bit of a, you know, an intersection. In 2011, the Republicans did door knocked on just Republican doors and left, you know, a little package that talked about a couple of Republican candidates, but the Democrats have never done anything formally like that. But, you know, behind the scenes, you know, certainly, you know, people of a certain party may tend to hang together, but I think there's lots of room for unenrolled and independent voices. And as you alluded to, Josh, you know, a sidewalk is not a partisan issue. It's trying to keep our costs low and our taxes low, because we're all paying property taxes. Keeping our costs low and fixing the priorities that we can fix, and trying to be creative and effective. And there's really not a Republican or a Democratic solution on those sort of things. So, I think it works pretty well in Newburyport. Yeah, it gets contentious. I mean, obviously the current national scene, is a bit unusual. We haven't really experienced anything like that in a long time. And that bleeds over a little bit, but I think the best thing for a local official to be effective is to, one, listen to their constituents, and two, just try to be as effective as possible with the limited amount of money we have, manage the city departments and their goals and objectives as carefully as you can, and just provide the basics. I mean, local government's all about public safety, infrastructure, water, sewer, streets and sidewalks, and education, and you know, that's pretty much the core of it. And I think that's something we all agree is important.
Yeah. Just closing out, I'd offer this comment, and frame it in the way of a question. When you're doing sidewalk repairs, the DPW will come in and they will bring it up to code. So you'll see the dips and the things, so that someone that's handicap accessibility, wheelchair, can get up and down, but they become wider.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have sidewalks on both sides of the street, have you had anybody pick up the phone and say, hey, the street seems a little narrower?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of examples in Newburyport, and you know, we have put more resources to streets and sidewalks, to sidewalks in particular, in the time that I've been on. We use some of the local meals tax money that we are now able to get and have put that, but you know, sidewalks are very expensive, so we haven't. I can't think of an example where they've gotten wider.
Narrow.
Making the streets narrower. But, you know, it's a huge issue. I would love to see, you know, more regional and cooperation with the state. You know, we contract our work out because we're not big enough to have all the machinery for road and sidewalk repairs. And I think there's got to be a better way to do it, more cost effective. I can't believe that, you know, we're still using asphalt and concrete, you know, things that, you know, been around for a while and you know, last 20 to 25 years, where they used to build things that lasted 50 years.
If you have the granite curbing, that's what's going to hold up the best. Use the bituminous concrete curbing, that doesn't have a very long useful life. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best in your forthcoming election, and maybe we can have you back and talk about some issues as the campaign gets closer.
Would love to do it, Josh. Thank you for the opportunity, and you have a great day.
You too, Ed. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill. Catch
a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Beth Gerard, who is a ward counselor in the city of Salem. Welcome to the program. Tell us, if you will, I know you've been on before when you ran 2 years ago, but for the listening audience, we usually start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, a 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions about what's happening in Salem.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Josh. So my name's Beth Gerard, and I am the Ward 6 counselor. This is actually my second term right now, going into my third term, hopefully. I have lived in Salem for the last 12 years with my husband, and we've been homeowners in North Salem for the last 8 years. I hold a bachelor's degree in anthropology from UMass Amherst, and I have a master's in health policy and management from Heller School at Brandeis. I'm also an active volunteer around town. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to be volunteering and then paddling for the Paddle for Plumber. Then later in the day I'm also going to be volunteering at the garden tour walk. So I'm very involved in the city, and currently I'm a project analyst at North Shore Medical Center. And really, I've just loved being the Ward 6 counselor. I work really closely with my constituency, and we work really hard together to get things done for our ward that ultimately benefits the city. And, you know, and I'm a collaborator, and I take that approach to addressing all sorts of quality of life issues. So I'm really hopeful that I'll get asked to go back for a third term.
Great. Now, there's a one of the questions we've asked different city councils is the tension or friction that is inherent in the checks and balances between a city council as a group and the executive office, the mayor, which is a strong mayor form of government in Salem. How would you describe that relationship in the context of what the city council is as a group in working with the mayor, in particular your relationship working with the mayor's office?
Sure. So let's see, how would I describe it? I guess I would describe it a few ways. You know, we all, I think for the most part, we're all working towards the same or similar goals that, you know, when you're a city councilor, you're in this very unique situation that you represent a ward or you represent the city, but then you're also living in the city, and so you have to kind of play both sides or sit on both sides. So it's like I call it like big C for big, like the city, and then small C for everything else in the city. And I think both of those are important to think about when someone is a city councilor. I mean, I describe it to people that it's an unusual situation. It's like this alternate universe because I'm one of 11 people in the whole city that makes decisions that affect the whole city. And, you know, for the most part, I think that my colleagues do feel that way as well, that, you know, we're in this interesting situation. We have to make these big decisions. And, you know, but we're also human, and so we don't always all agree. We don't always all get along. But, you know, one of our former presidents, he always stressed this, that at the end of the meeting, we all have to walk out the same door together. And so that's something that I've always kept close to my heart and kept close to my mind, that, you know, I can disagree from time to time, and I'm absolutely going to argue for things. But, you know, at the end of the day, these are people that are working for the city and working hard for their constituency. And I think it's the same thing with the mayor. I'm very fortunate that I have a really positive relationship with the mayor. In fact, I meet with her monthly, and I just met with her last night. And so we check in with each other, and I have this very, like, almost like an open door policy with her, that I can go to her with issues, she comes to me with issues, and even when we disagree, we still, again, we walk out the same door together, that it's great that I know where she stands on things, she knows exactly where I stand on things, so we've ended up getting a lot done together, and that's so important for any city.
You mentioned in prior correspondence communication that the mayor of Salem makes a point to meet with the ward councilors on a monthly basis. Is that right?
No, actually, you know what? I actually asked for that myself. I know at one point she had offered it. I'm not sure how many of my other colleagues have taken her up on it.
Okay.
But that's something that I've been doing since my first term, that okay. I meet with her every month.
Great, great. And what are the, as a ward councilor, I'm sure you deal with what some might call the nuts and bolts issues. The water pressure is low. The trash didn't get picked up. The plow went down the street, but I've got 4 feet to shovel at the end of my driveway kind of thing.
Right.
What is that like for you? And when Salem is undergoing infrastructure projects or revitalization how much, quote-unquote, traffic or of dealing with constituent issues does that create for you, and how do you deal with it?
You know what? It's a lot of work. Whenever there's plowing issues, as soon as we call it the blue light special. So once the snow emergency lights go on and we all put out, or many of us will put out on our social media pages that, hey, the snow emergency is in effect, let me know if something happens, then the calls, the emails, the texts, the Facebook messages, they then start, people send me pictures. And, you know, I'm really fortunate that, just like with my relationship with the mayor, that I have really good relationships with people, with the department heads. And so I can reach out to them, I can text them and say, hey, you know, my constituents, they need this. What is your time frame for this? And they're helpful, they're honest with me, if they can't get to it right away, they let me know so that I can pass it on to people. So it's a lot of, I try not to do the middleman thing because I feel like this is everybody's city and I don't want to be the only point of contact for people because, you know, if we're all living here, then it shouldn't be just me that has the relationship with the Board of Health, for example, or with DPW, because this is everybody's city, and they should be reaching out to the department heads, to the employees, because, you know, it builds relationships, and I think that that's really what ends up making a city more dynamic. And so then when we have these big projects, that, as you mentioned, you know, there's all these new projects that coming to Salem that I have a really involved constituency, and they're not just reaching out to me, they're reaching out to other people within the city and building their network and building the relationship, and then we can all come together and advocate for the same common goal that's going to ultimately benefit the city.
What do you think of the compelling issues that the next city council in Salem is going to have to contend with? Some of them may be in process now. Some of them may be just, you know, over the horizon. What are some of those that you see that are apt to be talked about in this campaign?
So I think, you know, some of the things that are going to be talked about in the campaign, and I think some of the things that aren't any different from any other, whether it's campaign season or it's during the term, that people are concerned about taxes, people are concerned about the potholes, the sidewalks, you know, the quality of life issues, concerned about the schools, concerned about traffic, new growth. I end up meeting with a lot of people who say, hey, I just moved to Salem. This looks like, I'm sorry, hang on one. Excuse me. So I meet people who just moved to Salem, and they say, hey, I want to get more involved in the city. How do I do this? And I think that, you know, we still have issues, like some of the big things that we've talked about in this last term, talking about voting rights issues, talking about the Sanctuary for Peace Ordinance, talking about all of these quality of life issues. So that's really what it's about, to be a city councilor and to address those, and to not only address those on the helping that neighbor out, but also thinking about how this is going to impact the whole city. So, of course, you know, when people talk about taxes and we have to talk about the budget, that, you know, it's not, you have to think about it both ways. It's kind of like, as I was saying in the beginning, that big C and that little C, that how does this impact the whole city? How does this impact my neighbor?
Sure. Okay. Any other hot issues that are on the forefront?
It's just, again, it's just these quality of life issues. It's, you know, I think, as always, traffic is a huge issue. In fact, I was at a meeting, I want to say it was last summer, that the mayor got up and it was about traffic and about, you know, new development. And she, and I don't know if you know this about our mayor, but her first role in the city, she was an intern in the planning department. And she talked about her time there, and one of the things that she had to do was review old planning board minutes from, like, the 1950s. And there were people complaining about traffic then. And so I think that that's going to continue.
Yeah, I remember being an intern in the mayor's office in North Adams, and one of my peers, it was his day to be the intern, and he had to go wash the mayor's car. That was.
I guess you learned a lot.
They couldn't find anything for him to do. He said, "Well, take my car down and get it washed." But anyway, that was Dick Lamb out in North Adams. But anyway, social media plays an impact. You mentioned it in your conversation a little bit, but both in terms of getting elected, but also in dealing with broad-based issues. Talk a little bit about that, if you will, and how you use social media and how it impacts both the delivery of services for government and your campaigning strategies.
Sure. So social media, I mean, it's whether you like it or not, it's here to stay, and this is a method that people use readily to reach out to their elected officials, to get services, to, you know, some people focus on complaints, and so I actually, it's funny that prior to my first campaign, I was not on Facebook. I was like, nope, I'm not going to have anything to do with Facebook. And then come to find out that, no, actually, you really do need to be on Facebook. You need to be active. You need to have a Twitter account. And so it ends up being like this really important and fantastic way to get out to people. You know, I, as I mentioned in my overview, that I'm usually out. I'm volunteering. I see a lot of people a lot. So frequently, but that's not always the most efficient way for me to get to people. You know, when I send out emails, and then I do my posting on, I have a counselor page, I post on our neighborhood pages, and different Salem groups just to let them know what's going on. And, you know, what ends up being really nice is that then it's viral, that people share it with each other, that say, oh, hey, you know, Beth just posted about, for example, yesterday I posted about the new bathrooms that are coming into Mack Park this year. You know, and so reaching out to people and just letting them know, and then hearing back from other people through other methods of, like, texting and calling me and saying, oh, I'm so glad to hear that. You know, and it's really an important tool in connecting with people, and that's one of the biggest pieces to this role is you've got to connect with people.
You know, I had Dr. Elizabeth Liz Brott, who was also a candidate in Salem, and she, of course, she and I are both in Rotary, and we show up at events for the children at Christmas. She dressed up as a great big yellow chicken and me as a white polar bear. So my joke to her was, well, you already know how to tweet.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's my neighbor. She's great.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and she's my vet.
I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I got your humor about the Heather Famico is not running, but everybody else in the ward is.
Yes.
And certainly wish her well, but wish you well in the forthcoming election, and maybe we can have you back as you get a little further into the campaign.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Bye.
So we're coming up on that time of year again?
Yeah, we are. It's election time, and more and more people are responding that they'd like to be on the show. I have some other guests that we're looking at. The owner of Turtle Alley Chocolate is going to be on next week.
All right, yeah, I saw that. Cool.
And I've been on the phone with Jeannie Blake. We haven't nailed down a time or a commitment, but we're hopeful that she'll have her either in July or August, and some other folks along the way.
Sounds good. Okay, that'll do it for Josh Arnold and Trending Now here on MSO News Sports on this Friday. Don't forget, Monday night we will return with North Shore Sports Night, and of course next Thursday, Connections. These are our live programs that we do regularly on MSO. And of course our football broadcast will be coming up very soon here as we just kind of plow through the summertime. So on behalf of Josh, our producer and engineer, Bill Popowski, I'm Rick Moore. Take care.